This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show, your weekly hour of radio drama, brought to you every Tuesday by RelicRadio.com. Our first story this week is from Theater 5. We'll hear Any Port in a Storm from March 16th, 1965. After that, it's The Avenger and Department of Death, his story from September 14th, 1945.
Great way to spend a honeymoon.
Darling, don't joke about it. I know what this boat means to you.
Meant to me. I doubt we'll ever sail this wreck again.
Darling, we'll know better after day breaks. Now, have you any idea where we are?
I have a pretty good idea.
You don't sound overjoyed. I hope the natives are friendly.
There won't be any natives on this island. From our last position before the storm, there can only be one place.
Well?
We've managed to get ourselves wrecked on Eniwetok Atoll.
Eniwetok?
Where we exploded our hydrogen bombs, remember?
Hydrogen bombs? Radiation?
Let's move, love. Better a hot beach than getting caught on this wreck by another wave.
Theater 5 presents Miss Betsy von Furstenberg in Any Port in a Storm. Wake up. It's morning. Look what I've got. I speared us a fish for breakfast. Now, if I can find the makings of a fire.
What am I doing on this beach? I feel like a piece of driftwood. Any wheat talk. Sammy!
Finally awake, huh? I can't find a blasted thing to make a fire with. Everything's either green or soaked by the storm.
Why do you want to bother making a fire?
To cook the fish.
What fish?
Right there on the sand beside you. Ain't he a beauty?
Sam, you caught this out in the lagoon?
But, darling, it wasn't flown in from Singapore.
But we can't eat this.
We can eat it if I can get a fire going. I'm going to get some gasoline from the wreck.
No! I'm getting rid of this.
Marion, you threw him back. It took me an hour to catch that fish.
Oh, Sammy, contamination. Everything on or around this forsaken place will be saturated with nuclear contamination. Have you forgotten? The hydrogen bomb was exploded here.
Well, I'm sorry. It looked like a perfectly healthy fish to me.
Well, there's plenty of tin food on the boat. We don't need to live off this land or the sea around it. And while we're about it, we'll see if it's not possible to stay aboard, wreck or not.
Marion.
Oh, come on, darling.
Marion, you don't sound like you anymore.
I don't sound like... Sammy. You're right, I sound like an old harridan. Forgive me?
Oh, I mean, you're the girl who thought honeymooning on a 50-foot catch would be a great idea. You went through a whizzer of a storm like an old salt, but now we're relatively safe and you seem to be cracking up.
Oh, darling, you know how some girls are afraid of mice.
Mice? Well, sure.
Well, I'm afraid of mice and radiation. Come along, darling. Come along to the boat. Well, how does it look?
5 feet of the bow stove in.
Well, can't we patch it somehow? Enough to float her upright?
It'd take a week to rig a makeshift bulkhead behind the hole. The search planes ought to find us before that.
Well, we can't be sure they'll find us.
Let's get aboard and see what goes. Up you go.
Oh, I don't need pushing.
Well, then take your foot off my face. Come on, throw your leg over the rail. Fall inboard.
Oh!
Now move over. I'm coming up.
Oh, my. Oh, I'll be a mass of bruises.
The rigors of sailing.
The rigors of being hoisted by a heavy hand.
It only seems that way. Now, let's see what we can find in the cabin.
How do you walk on a boat when the deck is perpendicular?
Same way you walk on a gable roof.
How's that?
With difficulty. Here, you want a hand?
Not again, thanks. Now, you go ahead. I'll follow somehow.
Right. Here, grab my arm. Pull yourself up.
Oh, everything in this cockpit is slippery.
Well, get hold of the hatch combing.
All right, all right. I can brace myself in the hatchway now.
Brace yourself for a shock. Poke your head through the hatchway and have a look inside the cabin.
Half underwater. Good heavens, everything looks totally smashed.
You stay here in the cockpit. I'm going down.
Sammy! Sammy, now don't slip and fall. I could never pull you out. Sammy!
Darling, will you stop going off like a fire alarm? I'm okay.
But I just noticed. I just noticed the radio. See?
What?
On the bulkhead. It's out of the water.
Ah. It's been in the water. There's salt crust on it.
Yes, but it's all transistors. We could dry it out.
Possible. We'll see. And Marion.
What?
Next time something gets your attention.
You made your point. I shall whisper.
Good. I am now heading for the food locker. Okay?
Sammy! Oh, are you all right?
Except for a battered chin and a lung full of this foul water.
What did you hit?
The generator. Totally submerged and too heavy to move. Which answers your question about the radio.
Oh, no. Oh, Sammy, does that mean we haven't any chance of making contact with the mainland?
I'm afraid not. Now, once more, let us see about the food locker. Locker door jammed.
What are you doing?
Breaking open the locker door. Now, let's have a look inside. Yes, you'll be glad to know the food tins are wet, but in good shape. We are not going to starve.
Yes, but the generator.
Out. Not a chance for contact with anyone.
All right. I'll stand back and you toss the cans past me into the cockpit. What about the water?
You can see the tank. It didn't break loose. Should be okay.
Good. Now, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to make some kind of level platform out here in the cockpit. Maybe with the hatch covers. And here we are going to stay until they come and find us.
I'm afraid not, darling.
Sammy, I am not going back on that contaminated beach.
But we've got no choice.
Sammy, did you hear what I said?
I'm trying to tell you this cabin is soaked to the ceiling. At high tide, the whole boat is underwater.
Get the bag to make that bundle.
It's my shirt.
Oh, darling, you'll sunburn horribly.
Well, I hope you get the shirt back after you've unloaded the tin stuff in it.
What are you bringing?
Cans of water. You start for the beach. I'll follow.
Oh!
What?
Nearly lost the bundle.
Well, watch it. Here I come. What is it?
Oh! Oh! Did you see that rat?
One old rat? Is that what you're carrying on about?
If there's one rat, there'll be dozens, hundreds. Oh! I can't stand rats. I can't stand the sight of them.
Well, let's take a closer look at this, my darling. That rat was scared silly of us. Didn't you hear him screaming?
Sammy, I have been bitten by one of those horrid creatures. They're the most dangerous when they're scared. I'm sorry, Sammy. I'm sorry, but we've got to get away from this beach.
Oh, easy, easy. We're going to work this out.
Sammy, do you realize? Do you realize what it would mean to be bitten by one of these rats? They must have survived the blast of the hydrogen bomb. Imagine what it would be like to be bitten from
Marion, we've got to keep our heads where we're sunk. Now, look. I'm going to bring in a sail from the boat. And rig a tent.
No!
It's only a question of holding on for a day, maybe two.
Do you think I could possibly sleep on this beach tonight, knowing that those rats are all over the place?
A day, maybe two.
I tell you, we've got to get away from here.
When they try for radio contact with us today and don't reach us...
Any place but this, even the open sea.
They'll have word about the storm and they'll notify air, sea rescue. Now, Marion, listen, if we just sit tight, the search planes will be along in no time.
A raft. A raft. We could make a raft out of the hatches on the boat.
And another thing, I'm not one bit sure we have to worry about this nuclear contamination.
You say we don't have to worry.
When was the bomb exploded? Back in the mid-50s?
I don't care when it was. We are going to build a raft.
Marion.
I said we are going to build a raft and get away from here fast.
Find the small compass?
Yes.
And the fishing gear?
I found it.
Just bring it along. It could be our survival kit.
I've also found a wet pack of cards in case we get tired of staring at each other.
You know what those hatch covers are nailed to?
Well, small logs, aren't they?
Wet, green wood.
What does that mean?
It means they'll float submerged. We'll always be awash out there, night and day.
Well, there's the metal trunk. They'll keep some things dry.
But not us. It also means we'll have small chance of fighting the currents. The sail won't be worth anything but shade.
The sail will be a marker, make us easier to see from a plane.
Not by any means as easy to see as that 50-foot boat, which isn't going to move from this lagoon.
Sounds as though you're getting ready to back down.
Could be.
Well, think again. We are going.
This business about Eniwetok being hotter than an atomic reactor. Now, Marion, I've been thinking that one over, and it doesn't quite add up. Now, look at that foliage behind you.
Yes?
A good 10 feet high and thriving. Any sign of mutations? Any twisted, cancerous-looking growth you can see?
None that I can see, and I'm not going to look for it.
Did you really look at that fish I caught in the lagoon?
Sammy!
Healthiest fish I ever saw. The rat that scared you half to death was fat and sassy. The land crab.
Land crabs? No,
all right. I didn't mention them for fear of scaring you. There were some on the beach early this morning. Looked fine, not sick at all. Now, look, there's no chance that a couple of days here will do us any great damage. We'll be found by the search planes. We'll be picked up. On the other hand,
there is the raft.
A waterlogged raft. And you want to take your chances on it in the middle of the South Pacific.
Would you rather I went alone?
Well, there's still no direct radio contact. That doesn't mean anything. Lots of things could go wrong with a radio.
Has there been any news at all while I was taking my nap?
Captain McCormick calls. No word from the search planes.
Imagine taking a nap while our boy's out there. Heaven knows where.
Oh, it's the best thing you could do. Now, we won't start to worry yet, my dear.
Trying to sail all the way out there in that 50-foot catch. I told Sammy and Marion it was perfectly ridiculous.
Now, they're both good sailors, and the Falcon's a stout ship.
But it's one of the worst storms in years. And the Weather Service reports there's more coming.
Well, it's evidently calmed down out there now. So let's take a calm look at the possibilities. Here on the map. I've marked Sammy's last reported position, see?
Hundreds of miles from any sort of land.
Yes, but the whole area's been laid out in a grid. The search planes are covering it square by square.
Look here.
Huh?
What's this dot on the map?
Oh, that's Eniwetok Atoll.
Where all the hydrogen bombs were set off?
Well, the storm was blowing in a direction that would carry them there. That, in fact, is what I'm hoping.
Hoping they land on that terrible place with all the nuclear radiation?
Yes, that's what I hope.
Oh.
Although they may feel the same way that you do about that radiation. Well, the fact is, a team of scientists went back there, found a stand of new foliage, normal fish in the lagoon, and healthy life on the land. The radiation was reduced to almost nothing.
Then they would be perfectly safe there?
Perfectly safe and easy to find, so long as they stay there. Now, Sammy should know that. That's what I'm banking on, really.
I'll take it. Yes? It's good of you to keep us advised, Captain McComa. Thank you. Another storm is forming southeast of the Philippines.
Now. We'll assume they made any we talk, and they're going to sit it out there till they're found. All right, Mother?
Sorry, darling. There's no logic to it at all. The two of us are staying right here to wait for the planes. I've decided.
So, you've decided?
Do you no good to talk?
I am not foliage and not a fish.
The sail gets rigged into a tent.
Neither am I a rat or a land crab. So, you had better listen to me.
I have been listening, and the final decision has been made.
Now, stop that. Leave that stuff on the raft.
Now, what are you doing? I've never seen you like this.
Darling, I want you to remember something.
All right.
You remember that night at the yacht club when we decided to marry?
A beautiful night it was. And so were you.
Darling, do you remember what we talked about in particular?
Where we'd live, what we'd do.
In particular, we talked about the kind of family we might have and how we'd bring them up and educate them. Do you remember?
Yes, of course I do.
Very well, then. consider this. I am not foliage, fish, nor rodent. I am a healthy young wife, your wife. Sammy, darling.
Honey, if you think I've stopped loving you just because I got my back up...
I don't think that for a moment. I do think I know you are being arbitrary and unreasonable.
Me unreasonable?
You flatly refuse to leave on the raft.
Marion, I have to take the long view. Now, look at that sky. The storm could build up again. Now, look, honey, I want us to get out of here alive, and our best bet is to stay right here.
Well, so much for us. Now, about those children we want.
Well, that's really taking a long view.
Exactly. If we stay on this island... Darling, do you guarantee that the effects of that radiation won't harm our children? Come on, answer that one.
What? Who can answer it? All right, Marion. Climb aboard the raft. I'll push off.
Theater 5 has presented Any Port in a Storm, written by Don Lamb, produced and directed by Warren Somerville. In the cast, Betsy von Furstenberg, George Petrie, Ethel Remy, and John Griggs. Audio engineers Marty Folia and Peter Sarantopoulos. Script editor Jack C. Wilson. Sound technician Ed Blaney. Original music by Alexander Vlastotsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Executive producer for Theater 5, Mr. Lee Bowman. We invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. That's Theater 5, New York 23, New York. This is Fred Foy speaking. This has been an ABC Radio Network production.
The Avenger.
The road to crime ends in a trap that justice sets. Crime does not pay. Avenger, sworn enemy of evil, is actually Jim Brandon, a famous biochemist. Through his numerous scientific experiments, Brandon has perfected two inventions to aid him in his crusade against crime as the Avenger. the telepathic indicator by which he is able to pick up thought flashes, and the secret diffusion capsule, which cloaks him in the black light of invisibility. Brandon's assistant, the beautiful Fern Collier, is the only one who shares his secrets and knows that he is the man the underworld fears as the Avenger. And now, the Avenger and the Department of Death. The employees of Kahn's department store are beginning to punch in for the day. Among the early arrivals is Mabel Darney, who hurries toward the employees' elevator.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Kilgore.
Morning, Mabel. You're in early this morning.
My clock must have been fast. My, Mr. Kilgore, your windows certainly look pretty this week.
Oh, thank you, Mabel. I've had quite a few compliments on them. Too bad I can't hold them over for another week. Saved me a lot of work.
I'll say. I wonder what's holding up this elevator.
I don't think Joe's come in yet.
Then where's the elevator? It's always parked here on the main floor overnight.
Call up through the grating. Someone else may have taken it up.
It's not in the basement. I could see down it.
Mabel, what's the matter?
Come over here quick.
Well, what is it?
Look, down there at the bottom of the shaft. It's Grady, the watchman. He looks like he's dead.
You're right, Inspector. Looks like Grady died from a fall. What floor did you say he fell from?
Well, it must have been the fifth, Jim. I checked the automatic meter on the main floor when I came in. It shows that Grady made his last time check on the fifth floor at midnight.
Well, let's go upstairs and have a look.
Okay, all right, O'Brien. You take over here until my men arrive.
Whatever you say, Inspector White.
Come on, Jim. Let's get out of this shaft and take the elevator to the fifth.
To the sixth, you mean, Inspector?
Sixth? I said he fell from the fifth, Jim.
Yes. But the elevator in that shaft would have to be parked above the floor from which he fell. We'd better check that first.
Get in the elevator, Jim. Sixth it is.
You didn't permit any of the elevators to be moved, did you, Inspector?
Only this one. I took it down to the basement myself. I ordered all the employees held on the main floor.
Good. Now, what have you found out about Grady so far?
Well, he's been a watchman here at Kahn's store for 15 years. Steady fellow, completely trustworthy.
Who's this fellow, O'Brien, you left on guard in the basement?
He's a store detective. Here we are. There's the elevator, just as you said, Jim.
Uh-huh. Very strange.
Well, what's strange about it? You expected to find it here, didn't you?
Yes, but would you mind explaining why Grady rode this elevator up to the sixth and then left it parked here? And use the stairway to the fifth floor?
Ah, Jim, don't start that. The first thing
Come
I
on,
know,
Inspector.
You...
Let's take a look at the fifth floor. We'll take this elevator Grady used.
All right. Now, there's no doubt in my mind this was an accident, Jim. Nothing valuable was stolen or the alarm would have sounded, so don't try to stir up anything.
Oh, a perfect landing, Inspector. Well, say, who's that coming in from the stairway?
That's Mr. Kahn, the owner of the store. Must have something important on his mind to climb all those stairs.
Inspector White, I want a few words
with
you.
What is it, Mr. Kahn?
Well, how much longer must I keep the store closed? I had a sale advertised for today. Several hundred people waiting outside.
Give Brandon and me 10 minutes more, then you can open the door.
Mr. Kahn, we would also like to have your permission to question some of your employees.
Question my employees? What for?
If Grady's death was accidental, it must be proved so to the satisfaction of the police department.
Oh. Well, naturally, I want everything to be cleared up properly, but... Well, look here, Inspector. There's no need to make a scandal out of a perfectly natural accident. I have some influence in this city.
You'd better take care of your own business, Mr. Kahn, and I'll take care of mine. Now, give us 10 minutes more here.
All right. It's not that I don't want to cooperate in every way possible, but as far as I can see, there's no need for a prolonged investigation.
In other words, Inspector, we mustn't let a little thing like murder interfere with Mr. Kahn's business.
Now, wait a minute, Jim. Don't jump to any conclusions. Now, why couldn't Grady have fallen down the shaft here?
Really, Inspector, that question isn't worthy of you.
Why not?
Well, first of all, these grating gates may look old-fashioned, but they lock and unlock automatically from the inside. Now, Grady would hardly have pried this door open in order to fall down the shaft accidentally.
Now, I admit you've got something there, Jim. But what do you suppose did happen?
Grady was killed or stunned by a blow on some other floor. Brought here to the fifth floor in this elevator. Parked right here on the floor where we're standing while his murderer took the elevator to the sixth floor. Left it there, punch the time clock on that floor, walk down the stairs, punch the clock here, and then pried open this gate and threw Grady down this shaft.
Ah, that's all guesswork, Jim. You have no way of proving any of that.
I can prove all of it, Inspector.
I'm listening.
Well, Grady had a bad gash on his head, didn't he?
Yeah.
Look, there on the wall of the elevator, about 30 inches from the floor.
Hmm. Looks like a small blood stain.
Now, look at the floor, right here where we're standing. There's a larger and more distinct stain.
Yeah, but why should the murderer overlook evidence like that?
Only a few dim lights are left burning on these top floors at night. The murderer didn't see it. Now, last but not least, look at the marks on this outside elevator door, made by a sharp instrument, recently. Bits of metal are still clinging to the marks.
Yes. All right, Jim, where do we go from here?
We start looking for the answer to three very simple questions, Inspector. Where was Grady murdered? Why and by whom?
Oh, very simple.
Going down, Inspector. Please face the front of the car.
Well, Jim, this is the first time I ever spent a whole day in a department store without buying anything.
I've discovered that shopping for clues in a busy department store is practically impossible, Perrin.
It's almost closing time. Shall we call it a day?
No, let's finish our examination here on the main floor.
All right. Jim, what's in that little room next to the book department?
Oh, that's where the vault is kept.
Oh. Say, this room on the right looks interesting, Jim. It's marked no admittance.
Oh, that's for us. Come on, Fern.
Seems to be some sort of storeroom.
Who's that? Customers aren't allowed in here. Oh, it's you, Mr. Brandon.
You're Kilgore, the window decorator, aren't you?
That's right. I'm getting things ready to change the windows tonight.
Heavens, are you going to use all these dummies in the windows, Mr. Kilgore?
Yes, miss. I've planned a party motif to display these various costumes.
That should work out very well.
Well, this first group of dummies is for the cocktail party window. Those for the dinner party. That group over there for the theater party. These in afternoon clothes are for the bridge party. And these last five will attend a supper club party.
Oh, the clothes are lovely. That blue dinner dress is stunning.
When do you begin dressing the windows, Mr. Kilgore?
Right away. I was just about to strike the set of that first window when you came in.
Oh, well, don't let us keep you. I'm just doing a little routine checking on the main floor layout.
Do you mind if I watch you for a while, Mr. Kilgore?
No, not at all. I'll explain the procedure if you like.
Oh, thank you.
Well, first I take off my shoes and put on these woolen socks. That's so I won't leave any marks on the rug.
I see.
One of the side windows opens right off this room, so I dress that one first. See, that way I can get started before the store closes.
Oh, seems strange looking at a store window from the inside.
I dare say. This little dummy I'm bringing out now did a very good job this week. The dress buyer told me she sold every dress she had in stock of this model.
Where do you put the dummies you take out?
Oh, in the rear of the storeroom. We have a sufficient number to alternate. Pardon me, I'll be back in just a moment.
Surely. Oh, Jim, come here and have a look at the world as a dummy sees it.
Well, since I'm beginning to feel like a dummy on this case, I might as well become acquainted with the outlook. Very befitting. The view is extremely limited.
You sound awfully low, Jim. Of course, I don't blame you much. We haven't accomplished...
Fern, look at that rug.
What's the matter with it?
There's a deep print of a man's shoe there near that table.
That's strange. Kilgore couldn't have made it.
No dummy is heavy enough to make a print as deep as that.
Anyway, the one dummy he took out of this window was over on the other side. Jim, do you think this means anything?
It means that a woman's curiosity is a wonderful thing, Fern. Thanks to you, at last we're actually on the inside of this case, looking out. Mr. Shelvin, you're in charge of the jewelry department, aren't you?
That's right, Mr. Brandon.
Until just a few weeks ago, their jewelry was on the mezzanine. Why was it changed?
Mr. Kahn decided to enlarge the department. There's more room for display here on the main floor.
I see. You're planning a big diamond sale as soon as the new shipment arrives, aren't you?
Why, yes. How did you know about that? Mr. Kahn told me I wasn't to mention that shipment to anyone.
Well, it seems to be a fairly well-known secret, Sheldon.
Mr. Kahn won't like that
at all. The new vault for the diamonds is over there in the room next to the book department, isn't it?
I'm sorry, but I'm not at liberty
to... Oh, well, I know it is. And also that you and Mr. Kahn are the only ones who have the combination to that vault.
Mr. Brandon, I hold a very responsible position here. I don't want to jeopardize it in any way. If you have any further questions, I prefer that you direct them to Mr. Kahn. There goes the closing signal. You'll have to excuse me.
We'll just finish up this report, Fern, and then we'll go out for dinner.
Oh, I thought you'd forgotten all about dinner, Jim. It's almost 9 o'clock.
Well, the inspector will want this tonight, but we'll hurry it up. Where was I?
You just finished stating that you were convinced it was an inside job.
Oh, yes. Take this down, Fern.
Ready?
I intend to check thoroughly on all the store employees who didn't check out at the regular closing time the night Grady was killed. This will include all who checked out early, those who were absent, and the few who may have had reasons for remaining late. I'm also working on the angle that there may be a direct connection between the murder of Grady and a plan to steal the diamonds when they arrive. But so far, I've found nothing to substantiate this theory. That's all, Fern.
Oh, good. I'm starving.
Oh, add this P.S. to the inspector.
Go ahead, Jim.
Meet me in front of the department store tomorrow afternoon at 4:30. To conduct a very important experiment.
Back to the Avenger and the Department of Death.
Here I am, Inspector.
Jim, what are you up to? Why did you want me to meet you in front of the store?
Inspector, we're going to pretend that we're two employees of Kahn's department store. We either checked out early or we didn't show up for work today. Anyway, we're outside the store according to our time cards. Now, if we're outside and can prove it, according to our cards, we can't be suspected of any crime that might be committed inside, can we?
I suppose not. That's the kind of evidence that holds up in court. But what are you trying to prove, Jim?
The purpose of this demonstration is to show that we can go into the store and remain inside after the store closes. All night, if we want to. Now, here's a complete list of the employees who were absent or who checked out early the night Grady was killed. We can discount the few who left late because they couldn't get back in past the watchman at the employee's entrance. You'll notice that this list includes a number of employees you've already met and whom we now have reason to suspect.
Well, now we're getting someplace, Jim. Who were they?
There were 15 all told, but the ones you know were O'Brien, the store detective, Mabel Darney, who discovered the body, Kilgore, the window decorator, and Shelvin in the jewelry department.
And don't forget Mr. Kahn himself. He doesn't have to check in and out of the store.
I'm not forgetting him, Inspector. He's on my list.
Well, what do we do now?
First, we walk inside the store, just like two ordinary customers. Then we make a very unusual experiment. Inspector, the door to one of the side windows is right behind us. I'm going to open it now, and we're both going to step inside the window.
Oh, of all the crazy ideas you ever come up with, Jim, this is the craziest.
Come on, Inspector. We're invited to a cocktail party with five dummies. Hurry.
Now what?
Sit down on that bench. You'll be partly concealed by those two dummies. I'll stand over here behind this lovely lady in red. You can talk, Inspector. No one can see your face, but don't move.
How long do we have to stay here, Jim?
Until after the store closes. Maybe this experience will teach you not to make me prove everything to you the hard way.
Well, where's Fern? Why couldn't she have done this instead of me?
You're the one I have to convince. And besides, Fern is up in the toy department questioning Mabel Darney. Oh, there goes the gong. It's closing time.
Oh, how much longer?
We're going to stay here like this until everyone has left.
Oh, this is carrying things too far.
Be careful, Inspector. Don't move. One of those window shoppers is giving your suit the once-over.
So, after I'd finished questioning Mabel last night, it was time for the store to close. So I went outside and watched you and the inspector in the store window. My, you look natural.
We saw you, young lady. And I might add, that wasn't part of your assignment.
I know, Jim. But I wouldn't have missed it for anything.
Well, what did you find out from Mabel, Fern?
Well, Inspector, she knows all about the diamond shipment that's expected. And she has a terrible crush on Mr. Kilgore, the window decorator.
Oh, that's no help. Now, look here, Jim. We're moving too slow on this case. Inside job or outside job, I've got to find the man that murdered Grady and find him quick.
We'll get that murderer all right, Inspector, but it may take a few days.
A few days? Have you seen the morning papers? Why, one of them went so far as to print my picture and caption it, "The Police Department Dummy." I've got to make an arrest in this case within the next 24 hours, Jim.
All right. I promise you that by 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, you can make an arrest, Inspector.
You know who the murderer is, then?
I didn't say you could arrest the murderer.
Oh, stop talking in circles, Jim. What do you mean?
Well, I know who the murderer's accomplice is. And since you're so desperate to make an arrest, I'll deliver him. Then it's up to you to make him talk. Here comes Mr. Kahn now, Inspector.
I hope you know what you're doing, Jim.
Good morning, Brandon. Inspector?
Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Kahn, we're going to make an arrest here.
What?
I sent for you because we want to handle things as quietly as possible.
An arrest? Who?
Roger Kilgore, your window decorator.
Why, you must be mistaken, Brandon. Kilgore...
Kilgore was implicated in Grady's death. One of his windows was deliberately arranged so that someone could hide in it without attracting attention on the outside. And someone did hide there the night Grady was killed. If it wasn't Kilgore, then Kilgore knows who it was.
Bring Kilgore in here, Mr. Kahn.
Well, I'm afraid I can't. Kilgore didn't show up for work this morning.
What? Well, has he called or anything?
No, not yet.
Come on, Inspector. We've got some work to do.
Now that we're out of the store, Jim, would you mind telling me where we're going?
We're going to drive out to Kilgore's home, Inspector. I don't like the look of this.
My car's around the side here.
Wait a minute. Take a look in that second window, Inspector.
What? Why, it's Kilgore. He's sitting on that bench where I was the other night. He has some nerve sitting there in the daytime.
Come back inside, quick! That's the window, O'Brien. Open it up.
Not so fast, Brandon. I have to have a good reason to open these windows.
And I'll give you one. Kilgore's inside there.
Kilgore? Well, what's he doing in there?
That's what we want to know. Open the window and tell him to come out.
Okay. Come on out, Mr. Kilgore.
There's something wrong here. Inspector, come into the window with me. You too, O'Brien.
Right, Jim.
Sure. Say, Brandon, I don't like the way he looks.
No. Kilgore has been propped up on this bench for hours. He's dead.
How was Kilgore killed, Jim?
He was given a hypodermic needle full of poison, Fern.
Jim, this case seems to be getting more hopeless by the hour. Kahn's store seems to have added a new department. The Department of Death.
Well, the whole thing has taken an unexpected turn, but things are beginning to add up.
for instance?
Kilgore was murdered by someone who no longer needed his services and wanted to get him out of the way. That time element ties up with a big event scheduled to take place at the store today.
You mean the arrival of the diamonds?
Yes. I think the plan to steal the diamonds furnished the motive for both murders. Grady evidently discovered something in connection with it and was killed before he had a chance to reveal what he knew.
But, Jim, why should the murderer stay in the store at nights before the diamonds arrived?
In order to make preparations for the theft. What those preparations were, I must discover today.
Well, I suppose we can eliminate Kahn and Shelvin.
Why should we eliminate them?
Well, you said they both knew the combination to the vault. They could steal the diamonds any time they wanted to without any preparations.
Yes, and be accused of the theft immediately. Also, in that case, there's the burglar alarm to consider. No, our criminal is much too clever to employ such obvious tactics, Fern.
But why should Kahn want to steal his own diamonds?
They're heavily insured.
Oh, but Jim, Shelvin hasn't been absent or checked out early since the day of Grady's murder. So how could he be guilty of murdering Kilgore in the store last night?
I'll admit that's got me stumped. But not enough to eliminate him. Come on, Fern. We're going back to the store. And this time we're going to concentrate on the book department. While we're here, Fern, I want to pick up a copy of Dr. Ledlow's book on crime documents.
Oh, I saw it here in this large bookcase the other day, Jim. I can find it in a minute.
Oh, all right. I'll browse around a little in the meantime.
Oh, Jim.
Yes?
Come here a minute.
Well, what is it?
Look at these books. They're completely disarranged, and some of them are upside down. This whole bookcase is a mess.
Yes. It certainly is. That's it, Fern. I've got it.
What, the book?
No, the solution to this whole grim affair.
Oh, at last.
Fern, Kahn's department store is going to have an extra watchman tonight. This is a job for the Avenger.
Now, that bookcase is out of the way. Got half an hour before the watchman and O'Brien come down here again. I'll have the jewels out and this case moved back by then. Who's there?
It's the Avenger, Shelvin.
The Avenger?
I'm here to close your department of death and bring you to justice for the crimes you've committed.
How did you get in here?
Your crimes invited me.
I can't see you, Avenger. But my gun can find you.
Kilgore and Grady got in your way, and you killed them. But you won't find it quite so easy to rid yourself of the Avenger.
You're there in the corner, Avenger. I'll get you, all right.
An invisible target is no target at all, Shelvin.
I'll find you.
You are missing badly.
I'll shut you up.
Now you're harmless. Your gun is empty, Shelvin.
What's going on here? Shelvin, it's you.
O'Brien, arrest Shelvin. I think you know the charges.
Thank you.
jail, Jim. Now that Shelvin is in custody and the newspapers have elevated the inspector to the status of crack detective instead of dummy, would you mind bringing me up to date on a few of the facts?
Not at all. We have to make out a full report on this for the inspector anyway.
Well, tell me briefly first, what was the clue you found in the book department?
Well, as you know, the diamond vault was in that small room that adjoined the book department. The back of the vault was against that wall. Now, the other side of the wall in the book department was completely hidden by that large bookcase. On the nights that Shelvin managed to stay in the store, he moved that bookcase and went to work on the wall. He broke through a section of it and succeeded in drilling through the back of the vault, leaving only the black velvet lining to be broken through at the last minute.
But the clue?
That bookcase was too heavy to move with the books in it, so Shelvin had to remove them. The night before the diamonds arrived, he was in a hurry and left them upset. That was the clue I needed.
But how did he expect to get the jewels out of the store?
After the death of Grady, Shelvin got himself an outside accomplice. By that time, he was quarreling with Kilgore anyway, and he knew he'd have to get rid of him. We picked up this accomplice this morning, and he explained the whole setup. After Grady's death, it was too risky for Shelvin to check out of the store early and come back in to hide. So he hit upon another idea. He hired a man who bore an amazing resemblance to him to check in and out of the store for him.
Very clever.
Shelvin's plan was to steal the jewels and stay in the store all night. The next morning, just before time for the store to open, his accomplice would check in for him, pick up the jewels in the washroom where Shelvin had left them in a shopping bag, and then exit from the store just as the early shoppers were coming in the main entrance.
And in the meantime, Shelvin goes to the safe, gives the alarm, and is under no suspicion.
Right.
Well, Jim, could we get the inspector's report out right away? I'd like to leave early today.
Oh, I can tell by that glint in your eye you're going shopping.
Yes, I am.
Well, murder or no murder, I suppose no woman alive can be expected to spend 3 days in a department store without buying something.
All characters, names, places, and plots used in the Avenger program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of
The Avenger.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember, you can find more old-time radio, thousands of episodes to listen to at relicradio.com. There's more from Theater 5, The Avenger, past episodes of this podcast, all the other podcasts, and a shoutcast stream with even more old-time radio. All available for free thanks to your support. If you would like to help out, visit donate.relicradio.com or click on the donate link on the website. You're the only way this is all made possible. Thank you to everyone who has helped out, and thank you for joining me today. I'll talk to you again next Tuesday with another hour of the Relic Radio Show.